Why settle for incremental growth when you can boost your revenue, cut costs, and adopt new technology more quickly? Why navigate the complexities of AI and the complex tech projects or technology projects alone when you can have insights from the forefront runners and the innovation providers such as Glorium Technologies? What the world's leading AI and technology experts are doing right now to transform healthcare and life science organizations and drive unparalleled growth right now is what we're discussing in these podcasts. This podcast is your gateway to the answers, providing a deep dive into the world of artificial intelligence and its power to amplify your revenue, to cut costs and adopt those efficiencies that are critical to deliver patient care, especially around healthcare and life sciences. So my name is Dudley Peacock, and I'm joined by our AI and technology expert, our resident expert, Dmitry Stepanov, and welcome to our podcast, The Revenue Amplifier, AI in Action. All right, welcome everyone to our first podcast, our first discussion around AI. AI and AI integrations, especially in the healthcare and life sciences industry, it's unbelievable how things have been happening, how things have been changing. And between Dmitry and myself, we're going to be having weekly discussions about the changes. In fact, we probably should have Dmitry, I don't know what you think, but I think we should even have a daily discussion the way things are changing and how rapidly they're changing. I think everyone's struggling to keep up. Let's tell me about what you think at the moment.
You are absolutely right. And even myself being in the technical industry and constantly monitoring new tools, new solutions, and recommending those solutions to our clients, to ourselves, sometimes we realize that, we didn't know about this new tool, about this new framework from Amazon or from Azure that was released in January. And it definitely would make someone's life much, much easier. Mm. And not from the client standpoint, from the functionality standpoint, and from the architectural standpoint. Actually, there is a solution for the current challenge. Somebody, I actually was looking at the different researchers who are working in our AI area, and they say that we are actually in a pretty unique area, and it's not like cloud solution that we've seen many, many years ago. It's a totally different, actually, animal, what we're seeing right now. Because the level of the growth in the past several years was so significant that we didn't see such significant growth in the technology in the last 20, 30 years. We do not realize it yet. We don't see it yet on our everyday life. But it definitely will kick in, and realization will come to everybody, not just in the technical industry. It will trickle down to pretty much every person in our planet in just a matter of time.
It is just a matter of time. And it's, for me, it almost reminds me of the jump between everybody used to walk, then they got horses, and all of a sudden they had motor cars. And now it's not, I can't get a faster horse. I need to completely change my life and have a motor car. Then all of a sudden, then you need roads. Because when you had a horse, you didn't need a road. You could go anywhere. And now you need roads. Now you need laws and regulation around people driving. And then you have to decide, are you going to drive on the left-hand side or the right-hand side of the road? And then it's all applications about that. So we're seeing that kind of jump, like as in a technology jump. But if you think about from internet, we just went cloud. So it was a very small bump, if you like. But from sort of plugging in with the old modems that made such a lot of noise. And if you remember, there was those old fax noises.
You remember this.
You remember that. And then we had the jump into the internet. So that was quite a jump. And then we had cloud people just started going more online, which is okay. But now with AI, I mean, as you rightly say, it's significant. And it really is taking this world by storm. I was wondering, maybe you could help us with the definition, because I mean, this is your space. Help us and help the viewers with the definition, because I know there's two types, two main types. You've got You've got the predictive AI, and you've got generative AI. And people just say AI, and in fact, there are different types. And maybe you just want to give us a bit of an overview of that so we can kickstart with at least a base understanding.
Well, from the technology and I guess from the science standpoint, it's a very clear cut. But when you go to the application, actually, we'll start looking at different types of the AI and actually how it's applied. The difference is somewhat gray area. But to be short, generative AI is a system that generates something that it wasn't trained on.
Mm.
Everything else is it will generate results that it was trained on. So basically, if it's an image recognition, well, this AI was trained on the image recognition to dimmer or detect some other artifacts. So it's not generative AI, right? But if you will go for something like ChatGPT, for example, well, it was trained on the books, it was trained on the web, it was trained on many, many other stuff, right? And you can say, well, it's just using the words that was training on, but no, it generates something different comparing with what it was trained on. And, well, I mean, obviously generating images, generating videos, just like it was recently released, that's all generative artificial intelligence. The first, by the way, do you know what the first generative AI which was used for public?
No, tell us.
Google Translate and Siri. Maybe there was something else smaller, but those two pieces were first one biggest generative AI that affected our life. I mean, and you compare a Siri with anything that ChatGPT can do now, that's nothing. That's a children's sandbox, nothing more than this. That's actually, by the way, I'm very excited and to see what Apple will release, because Apple always full of surprises. And they, well, the thing is, if they release something, it's working properly, well, at least in their opinion, right? It's always perfect. It's always better than everybody else.
They always wait for the longest
time. They always wait and then, oh, it's an innovation. Maybe nobody else did it before. No, but I mean, to be frank, I mean, they're pretty good in most of the areas. So I want to see what exactly they're going to release, because they're kind of behind. Everybody has large language models based on transformers. So, oh, by the way, I mentioned transformers. I mean, that I was told to not talk about transformers, but I'm still going to talk about it.
Okay.
It's not movie transformers.
Not, okay? Not the movie.
Yeah. Yes. So the biggest jump in technology in large language models, that's actually what ChatGPT and everything else, actually happened in 2018. And when it happened, nobody knew that it already happened. It happened with the release of the article from the Google guys. It's Google researchers. And the article is called "All You Need Is Attention." It's a kind of inside AI joke. Geek joke, because attention is actually a term within the AI models. But this article was actually, so instead of regular deep neural network, they brought a new concept, transformer. So transformers, it's a special blocks within the deep neural network. We're not gonna get into the technical details
here. Well, maybe later, but today.
Maybe later, we will dedicate one, yes, because it's actually for people who wants to understand what's going on and why it's so big compared with before 2018. People need to understand what is under the hood. And basically, it's a blocks within the neural network. And there, those blocks allowed you to interpret the text, the request, the results, not as a word by word. And I can, you know how somebody described it, well, ChatGPT will just generate one word at a time and then just sequence and then generating another word and so on until the whole result is generated. Well, it's somewhat like this, but not exactly. It looks at the entire context, it creates vectors for the entire context, and it generates results and searches based on the entire context. And those actually transformers allow this approach with normal scale, with the technology we had back then. And that's actually the sad thing. After we saw such jump in the performance, everybody said, wow, this is it. that's where we're going to move in the next several years. And now let's just scale it up. And a lot of science is actually ringing the bell saying, hey, guys, we need to stop about this, because what is happening right now, every big company just throwing new GPUs, just throwing new parameters, number of parameters on the system, and we just scaling up. Nobody is working on next generation solution that would actually help us to make this quantum jump that we made in 2018. Well, we will see how it's happened, but that's what it is. That's where we are, and that's why we are here after 2018.
So just for the benefit of everyone, let's just go back. So generative AI, and I'm glad you mentioned transformers and so on, but generative AI literally generates new content to a certain extent based on the way it was taught. But in terms of predictive AI, the way that I'm understanding it, and maybe you can just help me with better definition, is taking data. So you've got organizations, and if we focus, let's say, specifically on healthcare and life sciences as an example, there's a lot of data from patients phoning into different clinics and organizations that help with different types of healthcare, practitioners phoning out, let's say, just normal telephone calls or emails or some kind of communication. We also have the capturing of loads of data. So when you go for a blood test or when you go for some kind of scan or whatever it is, there's a lot of data being collected. And I mean, if you just take the size of any population, if each person does a thing at least once every so many months, the collective amount of data is huge. Now you've got practitioners that are drowning in data and they don't know how to use that data. And the way I'm understanding is that you can, with predictive AI, is you can take elements of that data and you could make some kind of predictive sense of that data. You could bring data together and then use the AI engines and that to then help you with some kind of output. Now tell us a little bit more about that as opposed to the generative side of things.
Well, as you mentioned it yourself, that what the system does, it actually takes the data and then either detects a trend. How it detects, it doesn't. It's actually sometimes we don't understand how exactly it does. It just does, okay? Or it detects some dependency between some input and some output. And this is it. And it's actually very fixed system. You throw the same input, it will always generate the same output. By the way, not as generative AI would do. And we probably will go back to this later. And well, the thing is, obviously, you cannot just take some machine learning system and just throw images and say, "Oh, detect new tumors." No, it won't work like this. Before you actually, it's a sequential process about training the model, about fine tuning the model, and then actually, it's a iterative process of improving the model, making sure that actually it keeps up with new images. Because if you make some changes on the input, I don't know, resolution of the images, sizing, or this model was trained on the adults, now you're throwing children images, obviously it's going to be something different and you need to fine tune, you need to retrain, and you need to make some changes. But once the system is trained, once the system is fine tuned, you just feed it with images, or you feed it with data, we feed it with the big data, with the phone calls, with the, I don't know, conversation for analytics, what kind of, I don't know, tone of this conversation, especially in the mental health care, by the way, it's used very frequently. You can feed pretty much any data, and then it will give you result. Actually, the good thing about, one of the big advantages about this predictive AI, sometimes it actually can link, how to say, from the human standpoint, unrelated things. So it will say, well, I mean, because if this thing happens, then this thing happens. And I mean, from our standpoint, like, not related. How could it be connected?
Yeah, there's a correlation that it draws without asking.
Maybe multiple connection between those two points, and we just don't see all points. But when you train the model, it just detects those correlations, it detects those connections, and then produces the results. So one of the benefits of doing predictive AI, that's actually finding new connections. Sometimes during those training, you actually find something new, which will benefit your, and depending on the research, it's a product. So it's always surprising sometimes.
Yeah, I'm loving that, because I think especially in healthcare and life sciences, that where accuracy is important, being predictable is important, and also making sure that you can improve the outputs that are being delivered by practitioners, by organizations that are, let's say, held to account for people's health, held to account by legislation and other things, that they deliver a result. So, and then there's also the other element is that as technology improves, the scanning abilities, the ability to record and let's say transcribe conversations, and being able to be even more accurate with transcriptions. I've seen, as an example, transcriptions, just the ability for the accuracy, especially taking accents and languages into account, multi-language, even translating while you are busy speaking. I mean, there's a ton of things. Yeah. I mean, even this morning, I did a Slack message, I did a voice note, and it transcribed it. I was walking at a rapid pace. There was a noise around me, and it picked it up absolutely perfectly, which that wasn't the case a few years ago. I mean, the accuracy has become astounding. And so I think we're going to just see more and more and more things happening. I mean, what's your experience?
Well, the same. And I just want to say, like, even like talking in the noise, for example, our brain is wired for specific way environment of speech recognition. And obviously, if you add noise, and if you add age, I don't know, if you add accent on top of this, so recognition becomes more and more difficult. And our brain is somewhat fixed. We cannot improve the model of our brain, at least in the foreseeable future. But what's good about those systems, artificial intelligence, like voice recognition, everything else, you can actually train it to recognize voice in the noise. It doesn't need to hear everything. It actually can deduce words by few words, by context, by actually the reason why this conversation is happening. So it will take even bigger context, and it will deduce what probably was told. But when you say about precision in the both actually predictive and generative AI, well, I wanted to say, You need to be careful, but that's actually, I'm starting to remove this word from my vocabulary. I'm saying you need to be aware, okay? So because like people saying, so what's the precision of your large language model in this specific workflow? What's the precision of your NORS in this specific workflow? I don't know. I said, well, I don't know either. Why are you asking me if you don't know about it? Well, I mean, it's a little bit off topic, but I guess we will go into this. So a lot of people are asking, so what are the limitations of the ChatGPT, for example, right? And from the scientific standpoint, answer doesn't exist, unfortunately. We don't know. We don't know precision. We don't know limitation. And actually what we're seeing right now, a new branch of science is being created to formalize this kind of thing. So we just need to rely on experiments that we are doing lifetime based on the model, based on the specific set of the data, training model and everything else. But it's only emerging. So like, give me exact precision of this output, unfortunately, will be met with some, I don't know, ambiguity, I guess. And again, you just need to be aware about this. So, and going back to the precision, predictive AI has, well, not the same problem. It's obviously a different problem. But again, it's a very well-known artifact. Medical industry knows. It's actually, you can get a medical device that will predict tumors, I don't know, heart rate deviation, skin condition, everything else, with predefined precision, with the sound false positive and false negative results. And those numbers can be pretty high. as long as you are aware of those numbers, I don't know, like false negative and false positive are 20 and 30%, well, it's high, a little bit too high, I guess. It's a, you are aware about this, the physician knows about this, radiologists know about this, and you just need to use those numbers to make a final decision. If you don't feel comfortable, take yourself and re-verify it. Or I guess it should be included in the workflow amount of images that need to be verified after AI, or it's just a system depending on the precision and everything else. So we will not get precision in any time soon, let me put it this way, in neither of those very generative or predictive AI. And actually, there is such term as a convergence. So what it means when you train the, well, first you train your model, both of them, generative or predictive. Once you train your model with generic data, the next step is actually fine-tune it to specific workflow. Or as an AI did for the ChatGPT, they actually train it for eight. So in ChatGPT, there are eight models. They work simultaneously, and depending on the request, one of the eight models will actually kick in. It will use the remaining seven models, but it will focus on, and each of these models are specifically trained on something after the general training. But once you fine-tune the model after the general training, you are missing parameters from the general training, and you need constantly to verify if you mess up it acceptably or you totally made it wrong and basically need to roll back.
Mm-hmm.
And you converging to some amount of errors that is acceptable for you. So you will not be able to converge to zero error by definition because it just doesn't work like this. And each company, each model selects this convergence level and just, okay, this is it. That model is trained. You can start using it. And that's why there is an error, right, in the model. And we know about this. So that's it.
Yeah, so that comes to then, like, so let's take it more practical. So from a practical standpoint, we've got, If I just think about sort of that whole prediction thing. So from a practical standpoint, is use the models, but they're more of an assistant than they are your primary source of information. So they will get you to a point, but there's still at this stage a requirement to assess whether the output is at least within a certain parameter of acceptance, and then always needs to be some sort of oversight. And I want you to maybe just, when you answer that, maybe think, just add in there this whole concept about motor cars that are self-driving. Now, there's this fear of people saying, am I going to let my car drive itself, or am I going to not trust it and hold on to the steering wheel and it can move, but I'm at least if something goes wrong. So maybe just talk a little bit about that, because there is obviously always an element of error, but is that error so big that it endangers lives or it endangers your output, let's say your job even? Are we at that stage yet, or what do you think?
I think it's a psychological, actually very deep psychological. Even like with the Tesla, with a self-driving module, it's not perfect. It's far away from perfect. I know from the first hand, I saw, let's say, artifacts of the unperfect driving from this assistant. And I mean, it's still beta as far as I remember. It's not released fully for public usage. But, well, if we'll go, just, I mean, let's kind of focus on Tesla, because, I mean, it's kind of related to what we're going to discuss. If you look at the numbers, then number of the accidents that involve Tesla autopilot and number of the accidents that involves drivers
and human beings
in Tesla without autopilot, then it's much, I mean, we're talking about 10 times safer to be into autopilot mode. Yeah, we saw some stupid accidents when the Tesla is just driving directly to the fire truck, or they're now hitting some kind of post, or just going out the road. Yes, it happens. It's actually, there is a term, it's called hallucination. And it's actually, this term is used in pretty much in AI. So hallucination is some behavior of the system which is unexpected or answer that is just doesn't make any sense. So it happens. But again, if you look at the big numbers, it is much, much safer to be into the autopilot mode. But again, by some reason, majority of the people, they don't feel comfortable sitting in the car and something is under hood is driving to you and basically takes care about your life. If you ask me, would I fly on a helicopter that was driven by artificial intelligence? I would say no. And the only reason I would say no, because, well, I'm afraid of heights. That's it. So my fear of heights plus my kind of, it's AI, it's just multiplication is too high for me to take this. Would I be driving Tesla in autopilot mode? Sure, absolutely. Would I feel uncomfortable? Yes, probably. But I would know that my conscience is saying, no, it's much safer. But my subconscious is saying, no, just take it. I mean, you drive better than yourself. So actually, same principle here in the healthcare. Yes, you can take a safe approach and you can say, well, obviously, every image, every interpretation should go to the radiologist, and radiologist should take a look and say, yes, this area is actually a tumor or some deviation. And he actually needs to look around and make sure that AI didn't miss anything. But again, there are ways, and actually, I mean, it's been used, it's been tested, especially with the predictive AI. Error margin can be estimated, not calculated, but estimated. And you just need, based on those error margins and false positive or false negative, you make a decision how exactly is going to be embedded into your workflow. So it's fully automated with just, I don't know, every 10 image needs to be verified that in general process is still working and nothing happened, but because you need to make sure. Or it's, as you said, just a system that helps detect some obvious areas, and the radiologist just improves his time. But we are already moving in this direction. And what we see a lot of saved time, and obviously which translates to saved cost in pretty much in every industry. And obviously since we're talking about healthcare and it's in healthcare, it's a reduced time that radiologists spend on the image recognition. It's a reduced time of the nurses and doctors taking notes for the patient. It's a summary after the patient visit that generated automatically. So just like you mentioned, the Slack transcript that gives you the text. So would you re-verify your voice message and make sure that every word is captured in this transcript? You probably wouldn't. I mean, you say, well, that's fine. It makes sense. I don't see any missed words. It's fluent. Yeah, I mean, that is okay. So again, it really depends on the specific area where exactly it sits in the workflow. I mean, obviously, there are more stringent requirements when you're talking to the patients about his health, I don't know, interpretation, recommendation, treatment plan, everything else. And there is somewhat, well, I'm not saying that it should be clumsy, but relaxed requirements when you're talking about an appointment, sending a recommendation, a reminder about bills payment, this kind of, so more administrative task comparing with more medical related stuff. Again, there is no one solution. Each workflow needs to be very carefully thought through from the risk point, from the precision standpoint, acceptance precision, and again, psychological still exists. It will exist for many, many years before we get through this, but it's okay, it's expected, no big deal.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's a good way to bring today's episode to an end, is to say that really we're on a journey, we're on a path. It started some time back already. It's now become more obvious to a lot of people. As you mentioned, Transformers and 2018 already, and there's a whole lot of things that are rapidly taking hold. Why? Because it's now become in the public domain, if you like. It's now become almost a marketing tool to a certain extent and an investor tool. So people are saying, hey, what's the next best thing to invest in? It's AI. I mean, now all of a sudden a lot more money is flowing, a lot more interest, makes a lot more money, and then it just snowballs from there. And obviously there's there's always a lag in which the technologies develop after, you know, that adoption takes place. But now, just let's just take it to practical, and then let's just talk a little bit about let's take an example. So we're going to bring it to a closer and say, let's end this at least with something practical that someone can take from this conversation, what they can do in their day-to-day lives. And maybe a way to do that is to say, if you're in an organization that's saying, hey, we need to bring in AI, okay? So that now becomes a statement. So I see the challenge, and may you far closer to this than I am, but I see the challenge in that we got to bring in AI actually means we got to go and look at the different individual applications, individual workflows, or specific use cases in an organization where we could adapt or adopt AI in a particular workflow and build out your AI implementation like that. Because you're not going to go and in one day bring AI to your whole organization. What you're going to do potentially is look for those high friction areas, let's say high manual processing that AI can take over, or maybe there's a particular skill set that is not available anymore on the labor market that you could rather, instead of getting people to do it, you know, you can get AI to do it. Or let's say a call center agent can make one phone call at a time, as an example, where an AI could probably make 10,000 phone calls at the same time, as an example. So just talk around sort of one or two practical applications, and then let's bring today's episode to a close.
Well, you kind of answered this question, but I will go from the top to down. So every step that is manual and repetitive, it's a good candidate for the AI improvement. From our experience, at least from the recently, one of the biggest workflows that are being replaced by artificial intelligence is actually communication in healthcare on the administrative level. So we're talking about calls, we're talking about gathering information about patient, we're talking actually questionnaire to the patient in a natural language. So large language models that communicate with the patient in different aspects. That's probably one of the biggest. And if you will take a look actually at the investment dynamic in the past several months, you will see that's exactly where money flows, and that's where money being invested. There are multiple applications right now being developed specifically in those areas. So we're talking about administrative communication, we're talking about patient information gathering, summarization of the doctor notes. So everything that are related in the recording data through the microphone, through some recording information, or through the iPad, or through some other devices. So that's probably one of the biggest ones. Obviously, we shouldn't discard you might say old style, but it's not old style. I mean, predictive AI is still major, biggest impactful area in the healthcare. I mean, because yes, you can reduce costs in the administration, but treatment patient, diagnostic patient, making treatment plan for the patient, that's the biggest part. I mean, we're still talking about image processing in all areas of the healthcare. We're still talking about, I mean, that's actually the new system that are coming up and being, by the way, money flows in those areas as well. We're talking about creating a treatment plans based on the patient history plus current questionnaire plus test results. So basically those systems, they are predictive, they are not generative. But I mean, again, it's a gray area sometimes, and you need to look at the underlying technology that being used in the specific case. But basically using all these batches of information to recommend additional questionnaire, additional tests to physician, to surgeon, to anyone who are involved in the patient treatment. So, but again, those are not replacement. Those are actually very interesting. Those are more like not even assistant. That's actually, I think, is going to be another role. It's a more supervisor, by the way. And why it's supervisor? Because it looks at all information that being entered for the patient and all the tests that being ordered for the patient and all the results, and doctor says this, and they said, you know what, you need to take a look here. So for me, it's not more an assistant anymore. For me, it's a more, I don't know, mentor, supervisor who kind of points you in the right direction and carefully pushes you to better solution, to better health care. So I guess that's just a few examples that you can use from the practical standpoint, artificial intelligence.
Those are excellent examples. And I'm glad that you ended on that last step where it's almost like a mentor to a certain extent, because us human beings, sometimes we can have these blind spots.
Yeah.
We get into autopilot mode, even ourselves, our own brains. And then we tend to neglect things that are potentially important, but they're just not within our line of sight. So that's an amazing conclusion. Thank you very much, Dimitri. So let's leave it to next week. In this next week, there's going to be a whole lot of new things happening, and I'm very excited to roll out this series. That every week we're going to come up with new things, but we had to start somewhere, and we started today with the basics. And as we go in this series of AI and in our discussions, we're going to be hopefully helping people understand, digest to a certain extent, but also be able to use this in their daily lives. I don't know, that's all from me. I don't know if you want to say a goodbye, but that's all from me.
I think that was a good conversation as a starter. So we will get into more detail, specific examples, specific applications area in our next meetings. Okay,
so before we go, please make sure you subscribe. Click on the button below, subscribe. Make sure you click the little alarm bell so that you get to know when the next episode that will be a broadcast. Please make sure you attend every single week. Join us every week. And please, in the comments below, ask us any questions. And if there's something we can't answer, we will go and find the answer for you. So let us know. Comment. Tell us any examples, and even tell us if you think we're wrong. By all means, go ahead to give us the comments, subscribe, and even like if you think this was good. See you next time.
See you next time.